BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Stig Abel. Welcome to Front Row, an arts and culture podcast from BBC Radio 4. Good evening from Soar Valley College in Leicester. We're live on air until 8 this evening. I'm sitting in front of an audience in the main hall of this state secondary school to discuss arts education in the UK. The big question is it in crisis? And the big answer seems to be yes. That's according to senior figures in the creative industries, from Andrew Lloyd Webber to Zoe Wanamaker. But more importantly, according to many of those who teach music, drama, design, technology and art. Here are some figures to chew over to begin with, bear with me. In the last decade, the number of GCSEs taken in the creative subjects, music, art, drama, and media, film, and TV studies, have declined across Northern Ireland, Wales, and England by 20%. That breaks down as a decline of 35% in Wales, 16% in Northern Ireland, and 19% in England. Scotland's broadly stable, but the number of music teachers in schools has fallen by more than a third in the last 10 years to an all-time low. So, what's going on? Well, in England, people are pointing to a specific reason, the introduction of a new qualification by the Conservative-led government in 2010. It was announced by the then Secretary of State for Education, Michael Gove.
We plan to call these new qualifications, in core academic subjects, English Baccalaureate Certificates, recognising that they are the academic foundation, which is the secure basis on which further study, vocational learning, or a satisfying apprenticeship can be built. Success in English, mathematics, the sciences, a humanities subject, and a language will mean that the student has the full English baccalaureate.
Known as the EBAC, this says that all children in state-funded secondary schools should study English, maths, sciences, a foreign language, and history or geography. The school is then measured on its performance in those subjects at GCSE, enabling a direct comparison for league tables. You'll notice the subjects not mentioned in that list. No art, no music, no design and technology. And the thinking goes, if schools have to prioritise the core EBAC subjects above the arts, then they'll offer the arts less often, less rigorously, with less resource. But how much does arts education in the UK really matter? Well, there's an economic argument. The creative industries are worth £92 billion a year and are growing at twice the rate of the UK economy. And of course, there's the ideological argument. Some might say that learning creative subjects is integral to the development of well-rounded people. Several weeks ago, we approached the policymakers themselves to take part in this evening's programme, but neither Damien Hines, Secretary of State for Education, nor Nick Gibb, Minister of State for School Standards, agreed to come tonight to defend the government's policy. So they can't blame today's Brexit developments for their non-attendance, I'm afraid. Thankfully, I have an expert panel here with me to shed light on the subject. Joining me at Soar Valley College are Julie Robinson, the principal of the very school we're sitting in, Mark Lehane, former head of the free schools advocacy charity New Schools Network, and the founder of one of the first secondary free schools. He also leads the Parents and Teachers for Excellence campaign. Bob and Roberta Smith, the contemporary artist and education advocate, known among other things for his 2011 artwork, Letter to Michael Gove. Spoiler alert, it wasn't a fan letter. Deborah Annett, the Chief Executive of the Incorporated Society of Musicians. Trina Haldar, Director and Founder of Leicester-based Mashie Theatre. Carl Ward, Chief Exec of the City Learning Trust, which is a partnership of schools teaching a combined total of 6,000 pupils in Stoke-on-Trent. And Bramwyn Jeffries, the BBC's Education Editor. Please welcome them all. What a lovely group of experts. Nobody tell Michael Gove. And we'd love you to join in the debate at home, actually. Tweet at BBC Front Row to share your opinion. Right then, Bramwyn, I painted a bit of a bleak picture there. Is it fair for the country as a whole, do you think?
Well, if you look at England alone, the decline in the creative subjects started actually before the EBAC came in. And it's worth remembering that the EBAC itself was partly a response to the fear that subjects like history and geography were slipping down the priorities, that fewer children were studying them up to 16. The idea was to give a broad-based education up to 16, so teenagers had a better range of options to choose what to do at A-level, a better chance maybe of going to university. And it's also possible, because there's been so much change in England, that this is a low point and things could get better.
But it's not just England, is it? I mean, Scotland is pretty stable, but we talked about Wales and Northern Ireland. Listener Mafanwy Alexander's tweeted in to say the Welsh Government is bringing arts to the centre of the curriculum. Is that true? Is that, have they seen a problem and doing something about it?
That's absolutely the case. I mean, you heard there in the figures, the fall has actually been even greater since 2010 in Wales. And they have rewritten their curriculum as a response to a whole range of challenges, very much following the model of Scotland. And they have six domains of learning. And the first domain is the creative subject. It is creativity and how you express that across your learning. And the same is true in Scotland. So philosophically, a very different approach from England with its emphasis on the core traditional academic subjects.
We've got three former or current head teachers on the panel, Carl Ward, Mark Lehane and Julie Robinson. Carl, let's start with you. Has the EBAC had an impact on the schools that you've been running? What's the impact been in terms of arts education?
Well, I think EBAC has had an effect in two areas, really. But those areas are connected with it. So the two big issues we've got surrounding that area are accountability and finance. Finances in schools have dropped significantly because cost pressures have increased over recent years. That's made it harder for many ed teachers to deliver the quality and standards and curriculum that they want to deliver. The accountability aspect, which EBAC refers to directly in league tables, actually means that different subjects that children take are worth different values. And because those art subjects aren't directly in the EBAC, then sometimes they can be viewed as having less value. If we look at some of the details, for example, over just last year, if we look at design technology, which in just 1 year had 116,000 fewer entries at GCSE than the previous year.
So it's a big decline. Mark, you've run for a free school. Is it right that there should be priorities? Are you concerned that the message from the government, whether intentional or not, has been there's a certain set of subjects that matter and a certain set of subjects that don't matter?
Yeah, I think this the squeeze on the arts hasn't just happened overnight. And as Bramwyn said, we've seen it in terms of GCSE entries, not just since 2010, but before then. And I think part of that is because the accountability measures schools were measured on such a long time were so narrow. At one point, it was just maths, English and a few other subjects. At least now we've got an accountability measure, which is, I hasten to add, far from perfect, but at least it measures students across a range of subjects. But what schools were doing as a result of the narrow range of accountability measures was they were squeezing what kids were doing in further down the school, maybe at primary school, or particularly in year 7, 8 and 9. And I've always found that if you don't teach a subject well in year 7, 8 and 9, it's not a surprise that kids don't choose it for GCSE.
So do you think EBAC's a problem because it's opened it up a bit, but it should have opened it further?
Well, what's really interesting is for some schools in some parts of England, which is what I know best, some schools it hasn't affected them at all. They've still got really high rates of children doing the arts subjects, whereas in other schools, they really have seen a big narrowing of stuff. So I think we need to look into the detail more before we make a general observation.
So, Carl, do we blame head teachers? Because if some schools can do it, some schools can't. Well, Julie, I'm going to ask you that in a second as well. But, Carl, is that the case? If not everyone suffered the same decline, then there must be individual responsibility.
Not everyone has. I would probably think that's the case. And I know examples where that hasn't been the case and where it has. Interestingly enough, where I often see those examples are in areas of significant vulnerability. So the art subjects have really taken a hit in those areas where schools feel that they've got to measure themselves on the league table and they therefore need to employ subjects that children take that gain points on the league table and art subjects don't.
Julie, is it fair to say, though, that maths and science are more important than playing the piano or drawing? I mean, there is a should we make priority decisions like that?
All subjects have their importance, don't they? But I think I would echo what Carl said. And it's really important that we offer a curriculum where students can follow their interests, follow their passion, follow the things that they are talented, they are skilled at. It is important they have a wide curriculum, definitely, but it's very important that we don't close off options for children at a young age, that if they have those interests and those ambitions to move in certain subject areas, that we allow that to happen.
So as a principal of this school, has pressure been put upon you to hit certain targets that's made you make different funding or allocation decisions?
The EBAC hasn't necessarily had that effect. But I think there are accountability measures that have. So things that have been introduced more recently, like Progress 8, has definitely had that impact on schools.
So that's focusing on 8 subjects, which again is not dominated by creative subjects.
Indeed.
Susan Coles has tweeted, and she's a listener, said, should we just abandon the EBAC and let the schools create their own pathways?
Susan's right there.
You think so? Go on, Bob.
I think we need to abandon the EBAC because it creates lunatic oppositional silos in schools. My son has just gone to the Bartlett. He's gone to the Bartlett to study architecture. It's one of the leading architecture schools. He got an A star in his art, A in maths. He got his physics A level. So this idea that you're either one thing or another, to be a great architect, you have to be visually imaginative and you have to be numerate. And so this idea that somehow we ought to park the creative people off in one corner is totally stupid. We teach knowledge, but we don't teach intelligence. And intelligence is about joining the dots. And it's the art subjects, not solely, but it's the art subjects which teach people to join the dots and understand how the world really operates.
We're going to come to I think exploring that a bit more. There we go. Bob and Roberta Smith there. What's the role of parents in this? Because it's easy to blame the government, obviously. It's easy to blame head teachers. But if are parents likely to say, I want my children to do certain subjects that, in my view, will get them a job? Carl, do you find that there's a parental responsibility here as well?
I often find that parents want their child to be happy at school because they know when the child's happy at school, they're going to do well. My experience is that parents want a school that does that. So if a school can offer a broad and balanced curriculum, and I'm absolutely agree with everybody around the panel that said that tonight, because that should be the focus of the school, then in general, a child will be happy in the work that they do. I do my own little bit of research when I go home every day. I've got two boys, Elliot and Morgan, they're listening tonight. One's 12, one's 9. And I go home and every night I say, what have you done today? And I usually get the, you get it as well.
Yeah. Mine are 9 and 7, I get that.
Yeah, quite. And then they do say, maths, English, science, whatever it is, but whenever they speak about something that's different to them, and this worries me, different to them.
Yeah.
When they've done music, when they've done art, when they've done design technology, and it's few and far between, especially in primary school, they speak with it about such a passion, they remember it, and it's really affected them. Now, I worry that we're not offering enough of that these days in our schools, Carl, in the way that we should.
You mentioned, Carl, music there. Well, let's talk to other people who work in the arts industry. Deborah, you run the ISM, which is an institution devoted to helping musicians. What's the state of music education? Because you're going to see people coming through the end of it, aren't you?
Absolutely. So the ISM set up the campaign group Back for the Future back in 2011 to challenge Michael Gove's proposal around the EBAC. And actually, the government dropped it in 2013 as a bridge too far. It was only reintroduced in 2015. So I think we just have to be very correct around the EBAC and when it actually came into operation. It's 2015.
But it may not be making an effect.
Well, if you look at the facts since 2015, the Ofqual facts, you will see that the art subjects, apart from art and design, have fallen off a cliff. And in terms of the latest research which has come out from the University of Sussex, we're seeing at Key Stage 3, so that's years 7, 8 and 9, music disappearing from our secondary schools. So it's now largely optional at Year 9, irrespective of the fact that the national curriculum should be guaranteeing access.
And do we get fewer musicians as a result of it? Is that...
I don't think we'll know for 5 years' time, and by then it'll be too late because we will have lost music from schools. So we're seeing it disappear at Key Stage 3. At years 7 and 8, it's often just one day a year in terms of an enrichment day. Now, you cannot learn the violin for one day a year. It's not possible. Even Paganini couldn't do that. So this government needs to listen to what the professionals are saying. We need a broad and balanced curriculum that can really motivate and inspire our children for the future. That is what we desperately need.
Carl, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, just wanted to pick up on the music aspect, actually. My trust and actually the Halle Concert Society are so concerned with that in Stoke-on-Trent we just put a bid in to open the first state music school
for 1,000 secondary school children, where every child will learn music from year 7 through to year 11. Now, not to act in the practice of defending the government in this area, but there are some things that every government does that are good. So the opportunity to open that type of school and partner with a fantastic orchestra like the Halle, for example, by the Free Schools programme, is an opportunity to do something different that will make a massive difference to the life chance of students in a very deprived and vulnerable area. And I am very concerned, though, that the reason for the drive on that is the fact that we are seeing that demise in that music sector, and that's very worrying.
And that's not good for access and diversity, because what will happen in our musicians will just come from elite schools or from little pockets.
Let's come to that in a moment. So I want to bring in Trina. Trina, you established a theatre company, but you don't really have an arts background necessarily. You did chemistry and engineering, terrifyingly for me. Do you feel that you're proof you don't need certain qualifications? Because if you've got the will, that's enough.
Absolutely not. I think I'm proof of what was said earlier, actually. I think to have a whole spectrum in front of you, then you know what the choice is. I think I did a science degree and knew that I wasn't particularly happy in it. Fortunately, I had a fantastic tutor who let me moan and groan to him and told me stories about his wife, actually, that did a science degree and then went on to do other things, which was massively inspirational in my journey, actually. I then went on to be an engineer and then found theatre. But I think I felt like when I found theatre, it was like I found the sweet shop that maybe everyone else knew about, and the doors of theatre really opened to me and I wanted to get very involved. But I've been very proactive in that, and I've sought out a lot of courses and support and really scrambled my way to understand everything that other people had done in a degree. So I would absolutely think that everyone is entitled to know what is out there and what is possible.
Bob and Roberta Smith, do you think that the role of education is to open the sweet shop?
Well, I certainly think meanwhile, in the independent sector, they really value the arts. I'm a Royal Academician. One person who hangs around the Royal Academy is the art master at Eton. At Westminster, they have fantastic art classes. At St Paul's, they value the arts. They value the arts because they realise the arts make people powerful. Boris Johnson, he's quite a good portrait painter. His mum was an artist, and there are images of his early paintings where you can see him painting the laurel leaf around the top of his head, saying, I'm going to be a powerful person. So the arts make people powerful. They understand that in the independent sector. And the daft thing about Michael Gove is that he's genuinely concerned with social mobility. But what he has done is neuter all these people. Because the thing is, if the EBAC had worked this year at Oxford and Cambridge, there'd be a plethora of state school diverse kids who had done those courses, and there isn't. And it's because when they're interviewed, those kids, they haven't studied Latin and Greek, and the arts are going to become like Latin and Greek. There'll be a weird set of codes that only a wealthy elite kind of understand.
Martin Hayne, I'm going to come to you in a moment to talk about this, but I do want to bring in this question of the value of being exposed to the arts. So I went to see one of the country's most famous art teachers, Andrea Zafiraku, who earlier this year won the Varkey Foundation's Global Teacher Prize. You probably read it. It's known as the Nobel Prize for Teaching. It's worth $1 million. And she's put her winnings into an education charity she set up called Artists in Residence, which enables artists to work with children in schools in deprived areas. Her school, Alperton Community Secondary School, is in the London Borough of Brent. It's got one of the most ethnically diverse, least privileged student populations in the country. It does pretty well academically. But I asked Andrea, did she see a correlation between academic success and creativity?
All the time. So, for example, I've got a young boy who I teach, and he is labelled as having every single type of special needs you can think of. So dyslexia, dyspraxia, autism, ADHD, poor kid's got it. But when he's in the art room, you can't see that, you can't notice that. And I'm finding that by us giving him a particular piece of work to do, that calmness, that ability to stay in the class, engaged for a longer piece of time, is having a knock-on effect on the other subjects. So his maths teacher is saying to me, Andrea, he's able to stay for half an hour more in my class. He's able to write two sentences really successful. So that is down to him being confident, and he's confident in the art environment. And that's just one of the millions and millions of examples I can tell you about how the arts benefit these students.
Andrea Zafiraku, which leads me to a question from one of our audience here at Saw Valley College, Professor Amanda Briggs-Good, who's the head of Department for Fashion, Textiles and Knitwear Design at Nottingham Trent University. Amanda, hello, what's your question?
Hi. Do you think that the decline of craft and other arts subjects in our schools might be partly responsible for increasing mental health issues in our young people?
It's kind of an inversion of Andrea's point, Julie. Do you think that if children don't get access to creative subjects, it is going to make mental health worse?
I'm not sure we can blame the state of mental health of young people solely on the decline in arts subjects, if indeed there is a decline in arts subjects. We haven't seen that here. We've managed to maintain numbers taking arts subjects at GCSE level. I think there are lots of factors involved. One of the things the arts does provide, though, is a bit of an outlet. So there are many students who benefit greatly from different ways of working. And if we take that away from them, then that will impact on their mental health. They need that variety in their day and in their week. And if they were to just have an academic diet the whole time, then that would impact negatively.
Do you agree with that, Mark, as a risk factor?
I think one of the great things about being involved in anything creative is that you get into that sense of flow, don't you? That mindfulness where you're just in the present and getting on with it. And I think we all know that when we get in flow and get in the zone, that makes a real difference for us. What's really coming across already in this conversation, and I bet it would be the same for everyone in this audience, is I bet we've all got a story, an anecdote about a time when the arts, something in the arts really moved us. For me, I can still remember the music lesson in year 8 at my comprehensive school near Reading, where Mr. Hayes put on the a cappella start to Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes by Paul Simon, and literally a shiver went down my spine, and I can trace everything I've done around music.
But it's a tragedy, therefore, is it not, if children are not being exposed to that? And we are, I mean, whether we blame the EBAC or not, the numbers that we quoted at the beginning was 20% decline, 35% decline. So that is a tragedy, is it not?
I completely agree. And the crazy thing is, actually, and this is, we've got to be really careful what I say here now, is this is not to blame head teachers, but we've got a really great opportunity in this country as head teachers and people working in education, because we have way more autonomy, way more freedoms over what our children study and how they study it in English schools than in virtually any other country on the planet. So we've got the tools within the constraints of funding and accountability measures to give kids all of that, and loads of schools do that.
So Carl, it's a good point that Julie here hasn't got a problem because she runs her school well. We just heard the same thing from Mark. Do we have to say there are some head teachers aren't very good at their job?
Well, I don't think it's about blaming head teachers. I think accountability measures are driving head teachers to make certain choices.
But not every head teacher.
Let me finish. When it comes to timetabling, particularly at Key Stage 3, coming back to the original point around craft and mental illness, actually there is some research in relation to this. The Girls Public Day School Trust, about 2 years ago, put out some research, and then they said they were really worried about the impact of withdrawing art subjects through Key Stage 3 and 4 in terms of the well-being of their girls. And they had done some really compelling research. So there is data out there that shows the EBAC is actually bad for people's health.
Carl, am I wrong to try and whip up a frenzy against head teachers here?
Absolutely. The work that they do with the teaching body in this country is unbelievable.
But how are some managing it well and some not managing it so well? How are we seeing a massive decline in some schools and not others?
I think you need to probably do more research in areas. It's like I said before, in very deprived and vulnerable areas, the arts subjects are an outlet for students. They are the thing that drive them forward to want to be fantastic in whatever they want to be. When I was running a school as a head teacher, I had a very simple aspect for children that went in to take what we would know as their options. They had to do the core subjects, massively imperative, English, math, science, be good at that. But you know, if they could then choose two or three other subjects that stimulated them and kept them on board, they'd have a great Key Stage 4
year 10 and year 11 and do fantastically well.
But Carl, it's often the schools in disadvantaged areas who are really worried about getting their kids their maths and English results that are putting on extra lessons that are squeezing out other things out of the timetable.
Why?
And I see. And I think that's the point. We'll come to that, Trina, in a second, because we will bring to, where there's priorities, there will always be decisions, and we need to talk about where those decisions are being made. You're listening to an extended edition of Front Row tonight with me, Stig Abel. We're live on air until 8 o'clock, and we're discussing, as you can hear, arts education with my panel of guests at Soar Valley College in Leicester. People have been tweeting. I want to read out a couple here. Adrian Dowd has said, it's insane to shoehorn children into subjects for which they have no aptitude or interest in. Better a good musician than a poor historian. Michelle Gregson said, Wales and Scotland are getting it right on the school curriculum, Bronwyn, to the point that you made. And the VCM Foundation says, please don't forget the impact on health and well-being. Well, we've just talked about it. It's also important to note that many, many primary schools cut arts opportunities. If you cut later on, you might get a cut earlier on as well. But we've had a lot of adults talking, so we are in a school, so I want to take advantage of that as well. In the audience, we have two GCSE students from this school, Soar Valley College, Prachi and Vanshi. You've got a question, I believe.
Hi. How essential is it to get qualifications in the creative subjects you're passionate about?
And that's an interesting question, because is passion enough? Because if you're passionate, you might find outlets outside of things you get examined in. Deborah, what do you think?
I think you need skills. Actually, you need skills and you need to know how to think. And that's why a knowledge-based curriculum isn't always the answer, which is what we've got at the moment. We need young people to be able to question, to be creative, because all the data shows that we're moving into an age of automation. Mm. And therefore, in order to beat the machines, we people are going to have to be particularly savvy, particularly creative. So doing one creative subject gives you that opportunity. And I'm just going to give you a little snapshot from my own personal background, because I'm actually trained as a lawyer. But I've got an O-level in music. And when I went for my job at the ISM as chief exec, I displayed my O-level in music. And they said, you're the woman for us, because you've got an O-level in music. I wouldn't have got the job without it.
Trina, do you think it's a qualifications everything, do you think, in this area?
I think... Well, what I was going to say was that I think in order to be the best scientist, the best musician, the best theatre maker, I think all these skills are not within boundaries. I think we learn in different ways. And actually, you know, I love reading The New Scientist along with The Arts Professional. I am a scientist and I am an artist. And actually, in order to be a thinker and a maker and a leader in this world, in whatever way that manifests for you, I think we need creative subjects in order to do that the best way that we can, to imagine, to be the architects of the future. I think you need passion, you need skill, you need determination, and you need the arts in order to do that.
You're a Renaissance woman. Prashi and Vanshi, you're Renaissance women as well. I think you're doing things like triple science to get a GCSE, but you're also cramming in creative outlets as well, aren't you? Where do you do your music?
Well, we do graphics, triple science and a humanities subjects for GCSE qualifications. Yeah. And we had a choice to do music, but there was a limit to this number of subjects. And we appreciate the range of subjects.
But as there wasn't space to do everything in the curriculum, we've also chosen following our musical interests in our own time, like lunches and after school.
So you've got a band together, haven't you?
Yeah.
We chose graphic design over music because we're fortunate to have the resources in school, which would be too expensive to pursue at home. So
this is thus resulting in our decision.
And you've got a band, but the band doesn't have a name.
We still haven't decided that yet.
We're going to work on that. I was in a band that was called Live Underwater. It's the worst name ever, so I'm not the right person to advise you. Prachi and Vanshi, thank you very much indeed. Julie, is it easy to support children's passions? Because if you give them some subjects, you're going to have to take away others. It is a zero-sum equation, ultimately, this, isn't it?
Inevitably, it is. And there are certain subjects, obviously, that they need to do. And we are constrained. that we are constrained by those accountability measures. And as Carl said, some schools are more vulnerable than others. That depends whether they're under the eye of Ofsted, where their results lie in league tables, how many children they're getting in through the door. And there are all of those sorts of pressures that are brought to bear on head teachers and schools that make a difference to the sort of range of subjects that they can offer.
Brahman, I want to ask you that, because we're talking about financial challenges, really, there. The government, which isn't represented here despite our invitation to take part, say there's more money going into education than at any other time. Is this simply a question of not enough money? Is that a fair point to make?
I think it is about priorities, and it's not always just about money.
That's money as well, though, isn't it?
But that's money as well. And it is true that in cash terms, if you just look at the headline figure, more money is going into England schools than ever before. But it is also true, because of all the pressures they face, all the bills they have to pay, the teachers pay, the other staff, and all the other costs, that there's been an 8% fall in real terms for every single pupil in a secondary school in England since 2010. And that's quite a significant constraint on schools. And if you look across the UK, slightly less in Wales, but similar pressures as well in Northern Ireland and Scotland. So schools, wherever you look, are having to do more with less, or just make very difficult decisions.
Bob, collectively, do you think we don't value education, and particularly arts education, enough? Is that the point that we're making? This funding gets cut and ultimately we live with it.
Well, I think one of the things is that we've gone down an eight-year cul-de-sac, and it's been driven, it's not invented by Michael Gove, it's because of the PISA testing regime, basically, which was so driven by the success of Far Eastern countries with teaching, you know, maths and sciences, and PISA is changing. PISA, which is this central body which governs kind of how the world educates its kids, has decided, hey, we need to include creativity because we don't understand really what the world is going to be like as the 21st century goes on. So our politicians have led us down a loony cul-de-sac where kids have got to choose between geography and history. That's bonkers. I mean, it's the same subject. It's called psychogeography, folks. and it's just been wrong. And that EBAC needs to be got rid of.
Bob and Roberta Smith there. Mark Lehane, do you think we are on the wrong side of the global movement in this area?
I tell you what I do think. I think there's a danger that we're only talking about education in terms of timetabled stuff. The curriculum in a school is so much broader than just the specific subjects that you're taught during the day. Like, it was Mr. McCurley and Miss Charlton, my drama teachers, that got me doing all the school musicals and all the school plays. I didn't do a single GCSE in art, music or drama.
Yeah.
But it was all that. And don't go wrong, it's important that those things are available in a school. I'm not saying
you're,
they should just
what
be...
What you're saying, though, is this is the government's agenda. It's unstated, but they want the arts to be an extracurricular
exactly.
subject.
No, I mean,
and
no.
that is a disaster.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because no state-educated kid will be studying the arts if we go down that road.
Yeah, but the teachers will not be there. That's the point. The teachers will have been made redundant. They won't be able to provide the extracurricular that you're talking about.
They won't
about.
Be there.
Let Mark make the point.
All I was going to say was every person that's run a school knows you don't just look at the timetable curriculum, you look at the whole range of offers. And I just said before you interrupted, you absolutely have to prioritise and make sure, for me, that you don't lose art, music and drama. When I was ahead, we doubled the amount of music lessons that we gave our kids every week at Key Stage 3. We actually got from the Incorporated Society of Musicians one of your certificates coming through, because such a high proportion of our kids went on to do music at GCSE. It is about priorities, it is about mindset, it's not just about money, but let's not lose sight of all the importance of enrichment to reinforce and expand children's opportunities if they don't necessarily want to do something for the academic exam side of things. That's all I'm trying to say.
Okay. Carl, do you agree with that?
I knew you were going to come to me next.
You look pregnant with thought.
Well, I've been very fortunate the last couple of years as president of the Association of School and College Leaders, which represents head teachers and college leaders in the country and other senior leaders, to meet quite regularly with ministers. And I've not met a minister yet that purposely wants to destroy the arts. But
there was a pause before the but.
I think there are unintended consequences of the shift to a full knowledge-based curriculum pre-16 and skills post-16 that are hurting the life chances of many students in this country.
Well, I want to bring that. There's an interesting point there, because the world. The World Economic Forum says by 2020, creativity will be in the top three most important skills alongside complex problem solving and critical thinking. Do you think we're going to end up with kids, Deborah, who ultimately don't have the skills that the world is demanding of them?
Absolutely. I think there is such a risk. In the 21st century, we're going to need creativity and really high-level problem solving. The EBAC is actually based on the 1904 secondary school regulations. Can you believe it? But it doesn't have the art that was there in 1904. Mm. The other thing is that this government has currently said that they don't want the innovation test in relation to PISA. So they're actually saying they don't want to apply the creativity test.
PISA are these global scores which all countries are measured against.
So unfortunately, the DfE is designing a school experience which is just not right for the 21st century. So it's going to be bad for GDP, it's going to be bad for mental health, it's going to be bad for social aspiration, it's going to be bad for diversity and social mobility.
Trina, you wear multiple hats here. You know, you've been in business, you've now worked in the creative arts. Do you worry that skills are not going to be developed that work in both areas?
Absolutely, and I think the diversity thing is one, particularly sitting on this panel, I feel like I represent a lot of that diversity, and the reason I set up my theatre company was due to the lack of diverse work available for young people. And I really feel strongly that all children of every walk of life needs to see the richness of this world. And that is one of the fundamental aspects of the theatre company. What I find really tricky is to be able to find and encourage young people to follow their passions, be aware of what those passions might be, and go into industries, which is, you know, a booming economic industry in this country. Yet what the government is putting forward is that this is not important, and actually it's becoming more and more difficult to find people and diversify workforces, which is a problem across not just the creative industries, but, you know, wider field.
Bramwell, you want to say something?
I just want to add a little international perspective on this. I mean, one of the interesting things about these PISA tests, which look at different countries, is each country is taking their different things. So Wales and Scotland are reshaping their curriculum, they say, because of the PISA test. But also, if you go to Singapore, which is the highest scoring on these international tests, they are bringing back making into their classrooms because they recognise that they need a certain inventiveness in their school system, that as well as the STEM subjects, they have to have people making and creating.
Bob, does it bother you that we talk about these things in kind of utilitarian terms of what's good for jobs? Do you think we lose a bit of a sense of art for art's sake if we do that?
I'm not too worried about that argument. I mean, one of the things I teach in higher education, and there's 1,000, this year there were 1,000 less domestic UCAS applications for art and design. Well, that is a disaster for British art and design. And it's a disaster for the next stage that people go to, which is the foundation course. I went to the closure of Hackney College's foundation course last year. Well, Hackney College is full of black and Asian students, and they closed that foundation course. And you're absolutely right to say, certainly in the visual art world, it's very white and it's quite male and it's very middle class. And the closure of Hackney Community College and the closure of foundation courses is damaging to that sense of diversity, because you're saying to people, you know, the arts aren't for you, basically.
I want to bring in one last. I want to bring in one last question from the audience, if I may. It comes from George Coles, who head of expressive arts at Willsthorpe School in Long Eaton, which is in Derbyshire.
How does the panel feel the creative industries, education sector, and policymakers can work together to secure the future of arts and schools?
So this is the big solution moment. I'll go through everyone. So try and be as brief as you can. Mark, start with you. What would you do? What would you change? What one thing can you change?
So there's a whole lot of things I'd like us to do, but if I had to pick one that's worth mentioning, and Carl's already touched on it, there's a free schools programme in this country where you can open new and in particular specialist kind of schools in the country. We've got the East London Academy of Music, which opened a few years ago. They're now working closely with Working Title Films, the film company. They're opening the London Screen Academy next September. There's a whole load of these arts-focused, they're mainly post-16 institutions, but as Carl said, he wants to do an 11-plus one. So to have some really amazing, world-leading specialist institutions, I think, would help. It's not the only thing, but it's one thing that would make a big difference, I think.
Trina, what would you say? Because that's not the government, that's people taking the decision.
They're using government policy to do it.
To do it. Okay, Trina.
I think broaden the scope for learning that we don't, or we, you know, I'm a scientist and I'm an artist, I'm a person, I'm a human being with skills that, you know, that are spread across a range of things that we call arts and science. But I think we don't learn in that way. We learn in many, many different ways, and actually we need to open out those boxes and those opportunities, particularly to those vulnerable people who don't get to access after schools, clubs in the way that some do, and to stop being elitist.
Amy Aylett's tweeted, by the way, to say, "I reject the false dichotomy of arts versus academic subjects. Music and drama are academic subjects. This erroneous terminology supports the squeezing out of the arts." It's an interesting point. Bob, one thing, only one thing that you'd change.
Well, the weird thing about all this activity is that we actually have created a new child art movement. You know, we've galvanised art teachers and educators and kids in thinking about these issues. And 100 years on, when Franz Čižek, who was an amazing printmaker, devised the child art movement as a response to the First World War, he thought that creativity was the antidote to the destruction of the First World War, and he created this thing called the child art movement. We are creating it again. We're doing it here now.
And we need to do more of it. Carl, what would you say?
Well, I'd be quite radical, actually. I bring business, education and government together to co-construct education policy in the country so we have really sensible, long-term vision for education that delivers everything we want for the future of our children.
So look at the end result. Deborah, are you about end results? Does that make sense to you?
I think Carl is absolutely right there. But I would also add on, go back to what Darren Henley said before he became chief exec of the Arts Council. He said, reform the EBAC, add a sixth pillar for the creative subjects. It's a no-brainer.
It's as simple as that. Another tweet, Gary Futch has tweeted in saying, arts and enrichment is fine, but I know teachers who just don't have time to do the plays, concerts, performances and extras they used to. So we can talk about it as much as we like, but in the real world of real teachers in real schools, it might not happen. Julie, what would you like to see to help make life easier for you?
I don't necessarily agree that the opening of specialist schools is the answer. I don't think that reaches every child, and I think that's what we should be aiming to do. I agree that we should be looking to review accountability measures in schools, and not just the EBAC, but in particular the Progress and Attainment 8 that have come in, so that they include a wider range of subjects.
And do you think at the minute they are focusing people too tightly on certain subjects?
I think they limit the choices, yes.
Yeah. Bramwin, how much does the government think about this? I mean, the government at the moment is only thinking about Brexit, one feels, from an outsider point of view. How radical an agenda is possible in this area? Do you feel there's likely, even if they kept the EBAC, to say, OK, let's put another creative subject into it? Is that possible?
I think the debate is shifting, and you only have to look at what the Chief Inspector of Schools in England is saying, Amanda Spielman. She's talking more and more about how schools should be judged on a very broad education that they give across the whole years that children are in secondary schools. And so I think there's a real shift in the tone of the debate around this.
Does anyone think we need collectively to do more, if we're parents or if we're just interested citizens, to demand more, not necessarily of hard-pressed schools, but the system entirely? Could we be active more?
I would say join Back for the Future. Write a letter to your MP. Make your voice heard.
And this is a chance to do it tonight. Bob, last word to you, very briefly. Do you think people want to have their voice heard?
I think everybody in this audience thinks that art is kids' human right, and it's fundamental to who we are as human beings.
Does everyone in the audience agree with that?
On the panel, we probably agree that too.
That's all we have time for tonight, I'm sad to say. The conversation will continue, and we will come back to it, certainly, on Front Row. People can keep talking on Twitter. We're at BBC Front Row, and I'd like to thank everyone who's tweeted in tonight. Enormous thanks, though, to my guests, Deborah Annetts, Mark Lehane, Bob and Roberta Smith, Trina Holder, Carl Ward, Bramwin Jeffries, Julie Robinson, and to you, the audience here at Julie's School, Saw Valley College. From all of us here in Leicester, good night. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed that, and I really hope you did, please make sure you're subscribing so you never miss an episode.